Regina, we know who you are. I see you got a few coins, right? It was exactly 2 years ago that I came here, and my hands were sweaty and sticky, and I walked through these doors for the first time, and I don't know if some of you remember that day when I walked in here, and it was on this day of Epiphany that I showed up. And I was looking for a church and a community, and I'm so glad that I walked here and here. I have to confess a couple of things to you. One is that I'm not a member yet of Assembly, but I have said in some places when they ask me, which church do you attend, then I say Assembly. And I have to tell you a couple of things out of that too. One is that people either they really like us a lot or they don't like us a lot. but we have a lot of, so when I go to churches and I say, you know, I go to Assembly Mennonite in Goshen, then depending on where I am, then they will actually say, hey, yay. Like sister communities in Denver, right? First Mennonite or Shalom Mennonite in Tucson, or when I, in Jennifer Sansonic's church in Harrisonburg, Virginia, then they are very happy when I say, oh, I attend Assembly Mennonite. But then there are other congregations when I say I go to Assembly, and they're like, Assembly. But that's good. I am glad that happens. I have received your welcome, your hospitality many times when I'm here. I do get to travel quite a bit for work, and when I'm here, then Vilma wants to go visit our grandchildren in Indianapolis, or then we get together with friends, and then life happens. But I really enjoy the time when I come here, and I get to sing with you and worship with you and be with you all the time. The other thing that I'm celebrating this week is that on Thursday, on the 7th, then it will be 8 years that I have been working with Mennonite Central Committee as Immigration Education Coordinator. And that is something that I never expected, that I didn't see coming, that I only get to blame the church for this, for what happened to me. And let me tell you a little bit about that. But one of the things that informs my work and my position on what I believe about immigration and migration, and it's such a timely moment right now to talk about in this reading in the Bible of Jesus, in recognizing that the Savior of the world began life as a political refugee. And what does that mean for us at this moment when last week President Obama or ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement, announced that they will conduct raids this month for the mothers and children and the families of Central American refugees and asylum seekers who came in the last 2 years who did not show up to court. And then we have heard reports that yesterday those raids started. And I don't know if you know about this. We don't celebrate much about the Day of the Innocent here, or the Feast of the Innocent, right? On December 28th is when we celebrate it. Sometimes in Latin America, we play jokes on each other, celebrating that there. But it is remembering also the children who died in the shadow of the birth of Christ. Then Herod goes and does these massacres, this genocide on children. And that's something that we don't remember. So it's this irony of having to live in a time when things still happen. These things still happen. And it's these tragedies that we continue to do, and it seems like history doesn't really teach us much. And then as Christians, how does Scripture informs us on this issue? How are we informed by the story of Jesus in our own life stories? And how do we see ourselves playing into that story as well? So the Christ child is quickly identified as potential terrorist, as a terrorist threat, as an issue of national security. and you have to get rid of them in this story. And then he ends up, and Jesus, Mary, and Joseph then take the way out. And this is the only time that you're going to hear me say this. Thanks God be to God for borders. Because it was a border that saved Jesus in some ways. The Holy Family had to cross a border, and that border is what kept them safe. Now, I'm not going to say that again, because I'm totally against borders. But isn't it ironic that then in this story, it is a border that saves Jesus? So how do we keep that together as well in that story? So then on these stories of kings versus children, and then presidents against refugee children, and nations against the powers and the world against children and women. And how that is informed by our reading of the scriptures. So my work then is in my position in immigration is informed by a reading of the scriptures through stories of migration. And then seeing Joseph and his coat of colors, but at the same time as a victim of human trafficking. And then you go through the stories of each of these individuals and characters in the Bible, and you find them all in this migration story, trying to figure out what God is doing in their lives, and then how God is acting in their moment in history, and how then they are reacting to that as well, and how they see God working in that moment. The other part of what I think about immigration is informed by my own experience as an immigrant, as a refugee, as the son of a refugee. And for many of you probably haven't, that I haven't shared this with, since we are Mennonites and we like to quilt, allow me to quilt a story for you and share with you how then, if we ask, is the church a light in the world at this moment? Many of us maybe don't have a good idea or don't have a good sense of what the church is doing right now on immigration or migration issues or how it's responding to the issues in the world. But I will tell you, yes, the church is a light of the world, and I have hope in the church. And many times when I say this, people think that I am just kidding, because sometimes it's hard to see this light, right? It seems like the darkness is so big. We're talking about 60 million people who are outside their borders right now or outside home, and you see the pictures of Syrians and Central American women and children and people at borders, and the darkness is so huge that it's so hard to see the light. But let me tell you just a little story of how then this light has shined in my life. And then invite you as well to see, because sometimes people ask me, so what can I do about immigration? How can I deal with the issue of immigration? And then maybe through this story, you can pick up a little bit of what the church has done for me. And then what then we can do. This is me. This is 1970. I was born in 1970. I'm 45 years old. And I was a cute baby. And yes, nothing happened. There was no accidents. I don't know what happened from then to now. But yes, that's me. I was born in Guatemala in 1970. And my father, at this point, he was a pastor, also a student in a university that was very outspoken about social issues in Guatemala City. And then for the first 8 years of our lives, then we live a normal life in between also a conflict in Guatemala that was caused back in the 1950s by the United States taking out a democratic elected president, and they installed a dictator, and that led to wars for 36 years that ended in 1996 by peace accords, but then the remainder of that is still in Guatemala to this point of that war. But I was born right in the midst of that. And then for the first 8 years of my life, and that's me there, my brother, my younger brother, and a cousin. And then for these 8 years of my life, life was normal. And going to church with mom and dad and holding hands, walking to church with my brothers and sisters. I have two brothers, two sisters. And then at this point, then life is normal. And then in 1978, my father was protesting in Guatemala City against some of the political issues that were happening. And then he's kidnapped. and then he disappears. And then he's gone for 2 weeks, and he's tortured during that time. And I was 8, 9 years old around this time. And then when he shows up in a mental hospital, and they transfer him into a general hospital, then we go to see him with mom, and I could not recognize dad. He had eyes bloodshot, broken bones in his face. The only thing that I know about that time when he was tortured, he says they used to tie him by his feet and dunk him into this thing of water, cold water, naked, and then they will pull him out, hit him with a stick, ask him for names of other people who were working with him. And then, but he was very traumatized by the whole experience. And this just turned our lives around. And this moment then throws us into a loop of a year and a half of fleeing away from Guatemalan authorities, and my dad trying to hide all the time. And so we went to live with a grandma and then with an uncle and with people from the church. So we were running around trying to find refuge in different places. But then in 1980, my dad received death threats again, and then we had to leave the country. And then he leaves in May of 1980, and he goes into Mexico. And then in August of that year, then we go there. And this is a picture of all of us, and I am in the back here, and this is my mother. And this is in front of the Basilica of Guadalupe in Mexico City. And this is the only picture that I have of that trip. And for us kids, it was this adventure of going to a new place. But I do remember my mom every night in that trip, because it takes about 3 days to get from Guatemala City to Mexico City in a bus. And at night, waking up and seeing mom, and mom was walking back and forth. Just trying to figure what she was going to do. She had her 5 children with her, and we were going to reunite with dad. But then she was trying to figure out what to do. And so this informs when I read the story about Mary and Joseph, and sometimes we romanticize it so much that we don't see also, they were refugees. They were fleeing away. There was danger. So then I can see Mary walking back and forth at night, thinking, what are we going to eat tomorrow? Where are we going to stop? They had experience already knocking on doors, right? So then they were probably knocking on doors several times, trying to figure out where to stay during the nights of the walk. It's probably about, I was reading, it said 75 miles from Bethlehem to the border in Egypt. And then maybe if they were going to Cairo, 200 miles or something like that to get there. So it wasn't just like, we're going to walk from here to Elkhart. It was a long walk. So then this informs part of that story as well, the reading of the scripture and what refugees go through. After 3 months in Mexico, then they our visas expire, those of us, like my siblings and my mom's, and then we have to return to Guatemala City, and my dad gets to stay in Mexico. And then so the family separates again, we go back, and at that point, then my father starts applying for refugee status in Canada. And when we arrive to Guatemala, then my mom says, I cannot have you all my children with me, because we were living in an apartment. So then she sends 3 of us, the older ones, right here, to live with my uncle for 1 year. And then my 2 younger siblings stay with my mom in Guatemala City. So then the family separates once again. During this time, I was in fourth grade. And then the next year, so then I go to Mexico. I was in fourth grade, and I failed fourth grade in Mexico because I could not, they pulled me out of school. And then I returned to Guatemala, and then I was in fourth grade again. But then my mom was in Guatemala City. My dad is in Canada. My uncle had 7 kids, plus the 3 that we added there. So then I wasn't accountable to anyone, so I failed fourth grade again. One of the things that I remember about the time when I was in that house is that my head got full of lice, my feet got full of fungus, and then I used to wet my bed every night. And those are the things that everything else is kind of blocked out of my mind for that year, but only kind of those things, those flashbacks in my head of that. And then this hope also that we're going to see dad at some point show up again, but then it will take years later for us to see dad. So then I failed fourth grade. So then by the time that I get to sixth grade, I just thought, I'm dumb. I'm not, because I keep failing school. So then after that, school gets really hard for me because I think I didn't care about school. So one of the things that informs then my position on how children face migration is during this time of my life as well. Sometimes we talk about adults and we try to look at programs for adults, but then we forget the children. How are we talking to children about migration and the trauma that they're facing in that time as well? Then 1985 comes and we return to Guatemala City. We live with my mom for 4 years. And then waiting for dad to, we keep hearing from dad that he was going to bring us to Canada. He was going to bring us to Canada. And then at the end of 1985, then the sponsorship comes through. And he sends us the documents. We go for passports and all the other work that we have to do. And then in February of 1986, then the time comes and we have to leave. And this is the last picture that we took one night before. And these are cousins and friends saying goodbye to us. So we are crying with one eye and then smiling with the other one. We're going to see dad, but then we're crying because all the people are we leaving again and the separation again that is happening. And then my older sister was married already, so she had to stay. She could not come with the rest of the family. So then we separate from her again as well. And then the next day we go to Canada. And then we show up in Canada. And this is a picture with dad. And I have many times said that this part of my life, it was like a new birth. Being an immigrant or a refugee or asylum seeker, leaving home, is like being in the motherland, in the womb of the motherland. And then there are these push and pulls. We call them push and pull factors of migration. And then you are being pulled and pushed around, and then you come out. And then you wake up in this new place, just like a baby. And then you need to be clothed different. And I remember when we were walking into in the airport in Toronto, in Canada, they start putting us through this room with hats and toques and gloves and boots and getting us ready. And then we walk out, and the first time we walk into the freezer of North America. And then people start talking to you, and you don't understand a thing they're saying, and they speak louder because they think that's how you're going to understand, and you don't understand a thing. Back 29 years ago, I only could say pencil, yes, chicken, egg, just very basic words that I had learned in school. And English is such a hard language to learn. How do you know the difference between content and content? When do you say it one way or when do you say it the other? And there are so many words that you have to actually memorize the context so you know how to say it. And then when I was just arriving in Canada, I was 15 years old. And then kids make fun of you when you say something, so then you don't want to say anything else anymore. So it probably took me about 4 years to actually carry a conversation with somebody at that point. And then food. My mom trying to figure out how to make the corn for the tortillas and grind the corn, because at that point there wasn't the Hispanic aisle at the store or the stores that you have find. Like here we have like Latino stores all over the place. Back in 1986 in Calgary in Canada, there was not one store where you could find black beans or the food for a Guatemalan. So then mom had to just figure out what to do and how to feed us at that point. And then we find ourselves looking for a church because we came from an evangelical background. And at that point is when we find the first Hispanic Mennonite church in Calgary. And then that was my first introduction to Mennonites. And then somebody said to us, somebody from a Catholic church said, I know you're not Catholic, so you should go to this church. I've heard they're Mennonites, but it seems like they're Pentecostal, evangelical. It's a mix, and that's true. Latino, Hispanic Mennonites are like that, right? We are a mix of all these things. And then we started going there, and they were singing the songs that we were singing in Guatemala in the church, and they seemed, you know, the same. So then we started going to this Mennonite church, meeting in the basement. In the church was this mix of refugees, asylum seekers from Latin America, from the coup in Chile, from Argentina, from Peru, from the war in Nicaragua, from the war in El Salvador, from all these places. And one thing that they all had in common is that they were strangers at some point, and they were welcome, so they knew how to welcome people. And they embraced us, and they took us in with all these problems. And when you're a migrant, a refugee, a stranger, you're vulnerable. You are you come with all these, it's like a baby, you come with all these poopy diapers and all these issues. And the church was able to walk us through all this stuff and help us through all that stuff. After a year of living in Canada, my mom and my dad separated. After this separation of 5 years or 6 years, they could not live together anymore. And then my mom decides to go back to Guatemala with my sister. And we stay with my dad in Calgary. And the church was this place where we were able also to work through all that stuff. And God bless youth workers. Because for at that time, our youth pastors were these people who embraced us. They used to take us to their house and feed us good meals. My brothers and I used to eat a lot. My dad used to travel quite a bit. So then he used to leave boxes of ramen noodles. And we know how to cook a good ramen noodle soup, right? So then that's how what we knew. And then every time when a sister in the church used to invite us over to cook, and then they will cook a good meal for us, a nice homey meal, it was a blessing. So then when we talk about welcoming others and refugees and asylum seekers and people, strangers, if you're talking about world things, then, you know, Syria and all stuff, but then if we're talking locally, invite somebody over home. If you know that they're here by themselves, invite them over. They will thank you for that. Maybe they're eating ramen noodles, but then when they come to your house, if you serve them a nice meal, trust me, that is like heaven. So I know that from this experience as well. And this church embraced us, and they took care of us. And it was the church that showed me that this can be done. So when I speak about welcoming strangers and refugees and asylum seekers, this is the church that showed me, yes, the church can be a light in the world during the midst of all this darkness. The other thing that happened in this church then is that I met a young woman there in the youth group, and I got married a couple years later with Vilma. She's in the back there, hiding in the back. And then this church became my congregation, and we served there for 16 years. And one thing that started happening then in this church is that they started seeing some things that I wasn't seeing. So they saw, this guy is good in the music. So then they allowed me to start playing the guitar. And then they allowed me to start leading worship. And then preaching and leading the youth group and the men's group. And then seeing all the sort of things that I wasn't seeing. They saw leadership in me, and which I wasn't able to see. Because I had all this history behind me. But then they started just encouraging me to do more of that. Then at some point, then somebody comes to me a few years later, and I was unemployed. I had been a truck driver, a forklift operator, a cook, a janitor, and then I had lost my job. And then somebody from the church comes, and then they said, I heard that Mennonite MCC, this organization that I didn't know at that point, is offering training for recent immigrants. You should go check it out. And then I go check it out, and then they were offering training, skill training for welders, automotive technicians, and auto body technicians as well. So then I apply for the auto mechanics technician training, and then through MCC, then I get to go through a training, And then they placed me at a Toyota dealership, and then I ended up working for 9.5 years. I get my license. I became a licensed mechanic through Toyota. Then they transferred me to Lexus. I became specialized in Lexus. I don't know if you knew this, but now I don't do that work anymore. But for 9.5 years, that I ended up working for Lexus and Toyota out of that experience too. But somebody in the church is seeing go. Then in 1999, 98, some people had come to Goshen College to study the Hispanic Ministries Program here. And then they went back to go to Calgary, to the church, and they said, hey, you should go study. You should go to Goshen. And then at that time, Vilma thought we were crazy. She was not doing it. And then it took a little working on that, and God working in our hearts. But then in 2001, at that point, I had to write my GED because I didn't have high school. So I wrote my GED when I was 31. Then in 2001, we applied for Goshen College. They accepted us here at the Hispanic Ministries Program. Then we came to the Hispanic Ministries Program. Then after that, I was finishing college here. And then at AMBS, they called me and they said, you should come study here. So then I go to study at AMBS, and I get a master's degree. And as I'm finishing the master's degree at AMBS, then somebody comes from the church, and they say, you will be good for this position that MCC has on immigration education coordinator. And here I am standing in front of you now, 8 years later, telling you this story. It hasn't been easy. When we came to Goshen, and we were driving here, 1,800 miles. I remember that we were very nervous about the move. We were crossing borders and getting here. And then when we arrived and we turned to Goshen in College Avenue, and we live in 710, and as we are driving our U-Haul and parking there, there were about 5 or 6 people from the Hispanic Minority Church here in Goshen, from Buen Pastor. And they were standing there ready to unload our truck. Then somebody comes and they say, somebody comes with groceries. And they said, here, I brought some groceries from you. As we are unloading our truck, then they fill our fridge with food. And then people start showing up, helped us unload our truck. And then at the end of that day, then they say, are you coming to church on Sunday? And I said, yes. Yes. And then I received a heart transplant from Calgary to here, and I started working with the leadership in the church here at Buen Pastor. And then we ended there for 12 years. I received the welcome of the church. And it hasn't been a lot of stuff that you think, what do we do with these refugees? It has been these invitations of welcome, hugs when I needed them, a meal. It's not hard to welcome people. It's not that hard to actually be a welcoming community. It's just being at the right point at the right time and putting ourselves in that moment when people are suffering and then extending that hand. I want to be quick here. This is a picture of my, and I don't know if you can see it over there, but this is a picture of my brothers and sisters now. There is one, the little one missing, this my brother here, who's missing in this chair. This was in 2009, and my mom is here. We haven't been able to be together at the same table for the last 29 years. Actually, it will be 30 years next month. And then this is one of the issues of migration, too, that informs my position on separating families. Migration is a terrible condition to be under if you're being forced to migrate. You're being forced to be displaced from that place. And one of the things is this separation of families. So one of the things that I am totally against is this separation of families, deportations that separate families, because I have experienced that as well in my life, and now I know how hard it is. Right now, I have 2 sisters who live in Guatemala City, and my mom. I saw them a couple weeks ago when I went to visit. I went to see my dad and my brothers in Calgary and Vancouver about 3 months ago as well. But then we're all over the place. And then I have a lot of nephews that I don't know. I haven't been part of their lives. And I almost forget their names because I haven't experienced life with them as well. So that's the other part of separation of families and breaking these fabrics of society. And this is the story. Now, this is our family here now, and this is my three daughters here, Sarah, Rebecca, and Vanessa. And these are my grandchildren. This is Mo, this is Andres, and this is Jordan. Now, Vilma is from El Salvador. I am from Guatemala. Our daughters were born in Calgary, and our grandchildren were born here in Indiana. One of my son-in-laws is from Anderson, Indiana. The other one is a Mexican-American. And one of the biggest things that I have at this point in life, my call for this moment, is to remind my daughters and my grandchildren of this story of ours. That my father was a political refugee and an asylum seeker. And that I and Vilma have been immigrants. And then in the future, when they hear that, it doesn't matter, they are American citizens and they can go their own path. But then in the future, 20 years from now, when they tell them, these refugees, these asylum seekers, these immigrants, these illegals, these wetbacks, then they will go back and they will remember, this was grandpa. This was grandma. So that they cannot mistreat somebody, because then they will remember that. And then one of the things then that I would like to invite you today is to tell this story. Dig in into your stories and tell them to your children. Because then that brings light and makes us then shine in the midst of all this darkness. Bring all these stories that then bring life and then of humanity. Let's quilt this, make this quilt and tie the knots and then put these stitches to different parts. And you see a quilt is made out of all these pieces and at the beginning don't make sense, right? Those are squares and triangles and all these things. But then once you start stitching stories together, then it looks like a beautiful quilt. I am so grateful for the church. This is what has happened. I blame the church completely on what has happened to my life. And I didn't expect this. And often I am traveling in different places, and the church has taken me to Capitol Hill and then to United Nations in different places to speak about immigration. And I just shake my head and I said, how did you do this? Because I didn't see this coming. So I am so grateful for the light like a star for the wise men. The church has been a light in my life. And I am here to tell you there is hope in the church. There is hope if we can only see it and we just dig in into being more welcoming communities. Blessings to you.